Welcome to the Everyday Ultra Podcast, a show designed to help you level up your training, crush your races, and ultimately become a better endurance athlete every single day. Whether you're an endurance athlete as a hobby or someone who wants to be the best in the sport, this is the show for you. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and thank you so much for listening. Now, let's get into it. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and super excited to dive into this episode here because we're talking about a topic that I'm sure all of you are excited to learn about. I know I was excited to learn about this when I got into the sport of ultra running, and that is high volume training. Now, chances are, if you are training for an ultra marathon, you love running, right? And I think that goes without saying. And when it comes to high volume training, it is a lot of running. So this is a topic that is very, very prevalent. And I think it's one that's very important to cover because I do think high volume training is important. And I'll talk about that. But I think it's something that is so easy to mess up and get wrong and really get into places like injury, burnout, not making progress. And so in this episode, I'm going to show you how to get the most volume out of your training so you can prepare in a way that's not only going to help you stay in the game uninjured and feeling really, really good on your runs and ready to go on race day, but also to make progress as well. Because you can do high volume training in a way that actually can hinder your progress as opposed to making it better. So we're going to dive into all the ins and outs on that. Now, before we dive into this episode, because this show is all about helping you be a better endurance athlete, I would be remiss if I didn't mention something that I've been using in my training that has helped me be a better ultra runner and really just been a level up in my training in terms of how I'm feeling, how I'm recovering, how I'm performing out on my very long runs and day-to-day workouts and everything like that. And it comes in the realm of nutrition. Now, when it comes to race day and training nutrition, it is such an important thing to get down because the number one cause of DNFs in an ultra marathon is actually gastrointestinal issues, aka upset stomach, whether it's just feeling crampy, whether it's feeling sick, whether you're, you know, having troubles keeping it in, for lack of better words. Regardless, getting your nutrition down is a great way to not only avoid DNFs in a race, but also to perform your very best. And I have been using various nutrition products over my years of ultra running training. And recently I came across a slew of tools and products that have been the best that I've ever used in terms of nutrition. And that is products from NAC. Now, NAC is a ultra running specific nutrition company. And a lot of nutrition companies in the world of running, they're really designed for shorter distances. Think your traditional gels and, you know, different types of sports nutrition products. They're more so designed for the shorter distance runners. And because ultra running is such an extreme sport in terms of how long you're out there, the duration you're going to be out there, sometimes using these products can lead to GI issues because they're not designed for ultra marathons. But NAC is specifically designed for ultra runners, and it does that in a few different ways. First and foremost, the products have a mix of complex and simple carbohydrates. Not just simple carbs like a lot of the nutritional products out there, but also the complex carbs to help to give you a more well-rounded carbohydrate system to help you go further for longer. Also, they have protein in their products to help with muscle recovery on the go because ultra runners face a lot more muscular damage when it comes to running farther distances than the shorter distance counterparts as well. And lastly, it also has tons of electrolytes to help you be more hydrated on the runs when you are going for those longer distances as well. So it's perfectly curated for the ultra distance athlete. Now, for me, I've been using the watermelon hydration mix, which is so delicious. And I've also been using their apple and maple syrup puree. And they have tons of different products as well, such as bars and waffles, and also some hot drink mixes, protein powder. They have tons of different things in their arsenal that you can load up for on your long runs, in your races, anything of the sorts to help you level up your nutrition. And because I believe in their product so, so much, I want to help to give you 15% off your first order of NAC by going to NAC.com, which is NAAK.com, and use code EverydayUltra at checkout for 15% off your order, or you can go to the link in the show notes. That's going to NAC.com, NAAK.com. Use code EverydayUltra at checkout and get 15% off your first order of NAC, and I hope you give them a try on your next long run, your next race, anything of the sorts like that. It is a great, great product. So give NAC a try, and let me know if you try it out. All right, everybody, now let's dive into this episode all about high volume training and how to do high volume training in a way that's going to help you maximize progress avoid injury and ultimately making sure that your training is the best it can very much be. I think before we kind of go into the tactics and everything, I think it's really important to define high volume versus low volume and what we really mean by volume in general. So a lot of the times with volume, when we think about that, it's easy to think about miles and, you know, how much distance that we're doing in training as well. But I kind of want to give a little bit of a reframe because volume doesn't necessarily have to be miles. And in fact, I think it's a suboptimal way to look at ultramarathon training, especially if you're training for a very mountainous ultramarathon. And with volume, I like to look at it more as time on feet. So time on feet, right? So instead of looking at how much weekly miles we're getting in, I like to look at the total amount of time on feet through activity that you're having in a given week as well. And so the higher the volume, it would mean more time on feet versus mileage as well. Why do I think that's so, so important? So mileage is a very, very useful tool to look at when you're training for something like a road race or a road marathon or something that has very level conditions. However, when you get into the ultra marathoning world, it starts to get a little bit more convoluted because there's so many more variables in play, right? Elevation gain, terrain, how technical a trail is, all these different things that don't make every mile equal to a mile, right? Because a mile going uphill on very technical terrain is going to be way more rigorous than a mile running on flat road. So therefore, if we're just going on mileage, it really isn't going to be a very, very accurate representation on load on the body as well. And if we're just going on mileage as well, like if, you know, you were, I always give this example to any athlete that I work with when, you know, they're coming from working on training on mileage versus training on time, is that if I were to give a 20-mile workout to someone who's just starting out running versus a 20-mile workout to an elite runner, that 20-mile workout to that elite runner is actually going to be a lot less taxing on their body than the person who is just starting. Because that person who's just starting, that 20 miles, you know, could take them, you know, 4 or 5 hours, whereas the 20 miles for another person could take, you know, depending on how fast they are, like 2.5 hours or 3 hours or anything like that too. So there's a very, very different discrepancy in terms of that. And that's assuming flat terrain. Now, let's just assume that fitness levels are the same for each of these two people that we're giving the same workout. If I were to give 20 miles to a workout to an athlete who is going to train on very mountainous, rugged, hot terrain versus someone who's going to do it on very moderate temperatures at a flat road and everything as such, it's going to be way less taxing for that person who's doing 20 miles on that flat road versus someone who's doing 20 miles on that very hot, rugged, technical terrain with a lot of climbing in there as well. So when it comes to looking at volume, I always say look at volume in terms of time on feet as opposed to mileage as well. And I also, one of the biggest shifts in my own training was changing the way that I schedule workouts and the way that I design, you know, training, workouts, everything like that, is switching it to a time-based training as opposed to mileage-based training because it's going to be a more accurate representation on load versus mileage, especially when you're running a very, very mountainous race and even with an ultra marathon as well. So that's the big thing on there as well. Now, I know a lot of people might be saying, hey, I want to do mileage versus time on feet. Like, that's how I've been doing it all the time. I just encourage you to give it a try with the time on feet because it's going to help to make things more optimal. Plus, from a schedule perspective, I'm telling you, if you're living a busy lifestyle, which most ultra runners do, it makes it so much easier as well. And it makes it so much easier to get in high volume as well too, because you can plan it well far in advance, right? Because if you have like a 20-mile run in a very, very crazy condition versus, hey, I'm going to go out for 5 hours, it's, you know, that 5 hour run is going to take 5 hours. However, that 20 mile run, depending on how you're feeling, depending on how technical the terrain is, sure, you can estimate your best guess, but you know, let's just say maybe you went through 3 weeks of building and on this like long run, you're kind of coming in a little bit more fried and you might be moving a little bit more slower. That 20 miles might take you a little bit longer. And now, you know, it's harder to plan things around those things to really get to all the things you need to do in your life, right? Plus, I also think with the mileage, you can miscalculate the load a lot more on your body and therefore risk injury a lot more too as well. So I start this off to say, when we're talking about volume in terms of this podcast, I'm talking about time on feet and how much time you're putting into the training as opposed to the mileage itself. So that's just one thing. And I encourage anyone to try this in my training. It's one of the biggest level ups that I've made in terms of switching my own training progress. And it's been a game changer for that. That's how I program my workouts. That's how I program my athletes' workouts when I'm working with them as a coach. And the benefits and also load management is just so much, much more accurate and safer to do. And also to just from a scheduling perspective, makes it much, much nicer. So that's just a definition on volume. Now, what is high volume versus low volume? The way that I like to look at this is looking at through the minimum maximum principle, which if you are a listener of this podcast, you've heard me talk about many times before. But if you want a refresher on it, or this is the first time hearing this, me talk about this on the podcast, the minimum maximum principle is the minimum amount of time per week that you need to train in your maximum period of training for a given ultramarathon. And so generally, I like to follow the minimum maximum principle that's suggested by USCA, which is the ultra running certification program that I'm certified in as well. And it's known as the gold standard for ultra running training. So when we look at the minimum maximum principle for a 50K or a 50 miler, you would need at least 6 hours of running per week for your peak 3 weeks in training leading up to the race. So at least 6 hours of running per week for the peak 3 weeks of training. And for 100K and 100 miles, you would need at least 9 hours of running per week for your peak 6 weeks of training leading into your 100K or 100 miler. Now, there's always a clarification that I get from people writing in and asking for clarification on this. That is 9 hours of running per week cumulative. It's not one 9-hour run or anything like that too. It's cumulative time on feet throughout the week spent running. Now, when I say that, I emphasize running because biking or, you know, swimming or any other kind of cross training does not count in terms of that as well. It should be running. Now, this could also incorporate hiking as well. It could incorporate that because, you know, some ultra marathons, you might need to, you know, have some hiking experience, especially if there's a lot of like vert and there's a lot of stuff. Again, that stuff does count as volume in there as well, as I mentioned before. So just know that, you know, really running or any types of hiking or things like that, that will count towards that minimum maximum amount that you're looking to get for a specific thing. Now, going back to the minimum maximum principle and kind of the high volume versus low volume would mean high volume relative to the minimum maximum principle of what you're training on for the given race itself. And low volume is going to be pretty much like around, you know, that minimum part as well. Now, is high volume necessary to complete an ultramarathon? Absolutely not. You could be at those minimum amounts for your specific ultramarathon, right? The 6 hours per week for your peak 3 weeks or a 50K or 50 miler, or the 9 hours per week for the peak 6 weeks for your 100K or 100 miler. You can do that training and be 100% okay. It is not a requirement to go anything more than that as well. That's why the minimum maximum principle exists. And that's why it's a beautiful thing as well. So don't think that incredibly high volume relative to the minimum maximum principle is going to define whether or not you are going to DNF or do success or be successful on race day, right? If you're getting the minimum amounts and you're prioritizing recovery and you're making progress and being mindful of that, you are going to likely be successful in your ultra marathon. It's not a guarantee, but you will likely be successful. And I would consider that someone who is, in terms of training volume, ready to go for a race. However, the more volume that you can put in, the more that you are going to build the things that are going to increase your chances for success on race day. Again, it's not something that's a must have. It's a nice to have out there, right? So I just want to lay the table on that because, you know, you might be listening and listen, you might have a full-time job, you might have kids, you might be married, you might, you know, have just a lot of priorities in your life, and there might just not be like enough time to go through and get high volume training. And that's 100% okay. And I'm actually going to show you in this podcast, if that is you listening, how you can actually modify your training schedule to almost mimic a high volume training schedule without actually increasing the hours in your training. That sounds clickbaity. That sounds crazy, but there is a way to do this. And I do this with any athlete who is tapped out for hours on a given week as well. So stay tuned for that. But if you can increase your volume as well, given that you're following the rules that I'm talking about, It is very, very important. So why is high volume important and why does it maximize your chance for success on race day if you can get it in? The first thing is it builds durability. It builds durability. And so what do we mean by durability? Durability is how much your muscles, how much your body can continuously withstand long periods of time training. So the more durable your body is, the more strong and the more, fresh, the more, fit your body is going to feel the longer that you go, right? For longer periods of time, I should say. So durability would mean like a more durable athlete is someone who still feels pretty fresh at mile 40 versus someone who feels, you know, fresh up until mile 20 and they start to get a little bit more decline on there. I'm not saying that, you know, durability is the only factor that leads to the, you know, how fresh you feel in ultra marathon, because nutrition and pacing and all those stuff definitely play a role into it as well. But given all those things equal, durability is going to allow you to be fresher for longer periods of time during an ultra marathon, which intuitively and logically for an ultra marathon, that is a great, great trait to have, because the more volume you put in, the more your body adapts to that higher volume and ultimately is going to be able to withstand that mileage a lot more at a comfortable rate because it is adapting to the higher volume, right? The reason why we progress in running, the reason why we progress in the gym when we're lifting weights, everything like that, is because we are putting stress on our muscles and our muscles are adapting to that stress and it gets stronger so that we can go for further. So therefore, that same principle applies with high volume as well with training. The more volume that we're putting in, the more our muscles and our aerobic system is going to adapt to go for longer. And therefore, we're putting that stress in there so we can go further. There is a caveat to this again. So by the way, I just want to say, I'll pause right there because don't just take this podcast episode as, oh man, Joe said high volume, so I'm just going to increase to 100 miles next week. Do not do that. That is one-way ticket to the PT office, and I'll talk about how you can do it safely. So just know that I'm not advocating for just jacking up your volume next week, you know, for just recklessly. Like, there is a way to do this, but I'm just explaining why high volume is important right now. So that's, again, going back to the points. And I'll talk about like how to ramp it up soon, but durability is your biggest thing as well. That's number one. Number two, it is a very good mental confidence increase. There was a recent study that they had done over the past few years showing what helped people through what quote unquote pain cave in the middle of an ultra marathon. Like, what were those commonalities in terms of tools for success for showing ultra runners who were getting through those low points in an ultra marathon? And one of the biggest things was past experience dealing with pain and dealing with a lot of load. And so when you're doing high volume training, you're probably going to get some pretty long runs where you're going to get to the point where you're hitting a lot more of that fatigue that you're generally not going to maybe get in low volume training. And that gives you the experience to show you how you can push through those things, or you know how to deal with those things in training so that you can take that experience into an ultra marathon as well. Now, of course, you can recreate that same kind of confidence building by doing races in the past and going in on those as well. But, you know, getting those in training can help to build the confidence, because you might say like, hey, like I was at mile 5 and I felt like very bonky out there and I, you know, or not mile 5, hour 5, mile 5. I mean, hey, we've all been there, but for hour 5 and a long run, right? And you just put in tons of volume like prior to the week, so you're a little fried. And let's just say, oh man, I was feeling a little bonky at hour 4 on this run, but I stopped. I made sure to eat. I made sure to get through this. And I was able to complete the last 2 hours of my 7-hour run, like pretty, pretty strong from there as well. And it's hard to get those kind of experiences on lower volume training as well. So the more experiences that you can give yourself like that in your high volume or in your training, which is generally when it comes to higher volume, the more confidence that you can build going through on a race day, because you know how to deal with a lot more of those low points so much more as well. The other thing too is like, you were just like, the third thing I will say, the third point of like why high volume is so great is because it gives you the ability to add a lot of aerobic fitness, right? Because think about it, like we are really testing for the most part in a lot of these ultra marathons, especially 50 miles and above, we are mostly operating in aerobic capacity, right? 50K too, you're racing in aerobic capacity, like definitely for sure. But you know, sometimes you might be going a little faster than the other stuff. But regardless, you are trying to go for longer periods of time, and that is training your aerobic, which is your engine that is powered by, like, or that helps to power easy running, right? So anaerobic is going to be like your faster kind of workouts, your tempo runs, your interval workouts, the really fast stuff. Aerobic's going to be your very easy pace, your go all day pace, all that kind of stuff as well. That's going to be the system that's powering those kind of intensities. And the longer that you go at that aerobic pace, the more that you are stressing your aerobic system, and therefore the more it is adapting to go for longer periods of time. Plus you allow your body to get much more smarter at burning fat as opposed to sugar in your body, and therefore your body's fat burning metabolism can, or I should say, not necessarily metabolism, but activation can go for longer periods of time because you are just putting in longer and longer easy miles as well, which is going to help to build an aerobic engine like no other. So those are the three main reasons why high volume is important, is because you get better durability, you get better confidence mentally. And the third thing is, you know, you build a very, very strong aerobic engine that's going to allow you to go for much further for, you know, feeling a lot more comfortable as opposed to having that aerobic system frying out and you're kind of breathing a little bit more and everything like that as well. So that's why high volume is important. But there are some big caveats to all this, and there are so many mistakes that a lot of people make when it comes to implementing high volume in training. Now, as an ultra runner myself, and when I started to get in the sport, again, I thought that the thought is true that high volume is a good thing to have. However, as soon as I implemented high volume, I got injured. I was feeling burnt out. I wasn't making any progress. I was really sucking. Like, it just wasn't good at all. And it was only until I really dove into the studies, I really dove into the application, I really dove into how to actually implement high volume in a way that was going to not only keep me from getting injured, but ultimately increase my performance, where I got to finally see how to implement high volume in my training to really get the biggest bang for my buck. And so here are the biggest mistakes that people make when implementing high volume training that you can avoid, so you can implement high volume training in your protocol if you have the time for it and if you're willing to do so, to help you get the best results possible and stay injury free. So the first principle when it comes to adding in higher volume into your training in a safe way and an effective way is, as I was mentioning before, don't just go out there and rip high volume off the couch or off of a low base or just, you know, increasing volume as much as possible. You definitely don't want to do that. What you have to do is you have to build into high volume gradually and safely in the load that your body can handle. Now, when we're looking at what that essentially means, like, that's going to really differ person by person basis, right? Because one person might have the capacity in their body to handle a lot more volume based on where they're at right now versus someone else at a different life cycle of their training or different history or anything like that. And there's a lot of different things to look into when determining, you know, what the base is you're working on to increase volume, right? Those are things like, what is your recent running history, right? Specifically, I like to look over like the last 3 months of training. Have you been running consistently? Have you been increasing volume consistently? Have you been staying around the same volume? What is your intensity looking like? Training history is going to be one of the best ways to determine how much you can increase your volume on, and also, you know, how aggressive can you increase your volume, how conservative you should be, like what kind of volume should you increase in terms of vertical gain and everything like that. But looking at your past training history in the recency is a great way to look at it as well. The other thing to look into is your overall training history. So not just the past 3 months, but also the past few years, if you have years of running experience. And why that's important is because, you know, that's going to take into account like what your body has historically handled in the past. And also taking note of subjective things like, have you felt good at, you know, higher volume? Have you felt a little bit worse? Have you felt, you know, like you were getting a little bit sleep deprived, which we'll kind of talk about in a little bit, like in terms of just trying to fit in the workouts in, right? Looking at like where you historically have been is also a good thing to look at as well, because even over, let's just say you did take an off season over the past like 3 months or something like that, but historically you've been putting up, you know, 10, 11, 12 hour weeks of training, so to say, you can always ramp into it a little quicker given that your base is, you know, historically a little bigger as well. So it's not just the past 3 months, but it's also, you know, the overall training history as well. The other thing to look into is your injury history. So do you have a history of getting injuries? Do you have injuries that are specifically caused by increased mileage or increased intensity or increased amount of vert or downhill, right? Looking at injury history is also going to be key because, you know, if you are more prone to injuries, you have to take volume increases in a very controlled manner so that you don't piss off the muscle or the tendon or whatever that might be injury that you might have had injuries on in the past when you're increasing volume as well. Because there's always a risk for injury when you're increasing volume, but you can mitigate that by controlling it in a way that keeps it in check safely, not only with the injury that you're going with, but, you know, without risking any new injuries as well. So that is always something that you want to look into as well. The other thing too is your availability. And I think this is a great thing to determine even before you start day one of your ultra marathon training plan is your availability. So all those things will determine, you know, how you can increase your volume and kind of go it from there too as well. The other thing you want to also, a principle to really keep in mind when you're looking at increasing volume is you never want to have volume take place of sleep, recovery, or stress levels. I'll say that again. You never want to increase volume so that it takes away from sleep, recovery, or stress levels. And this is extremely important. This is extremely important. So sleep is a huge, huge one. So as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, the way that we make adaptations in our body is we have to stress it and then we have to rest it. Now, notice that there's two different parts of that formula. There's stress and there's rest. Without stress, there's no stimulus for our body to be challenged enough where it has to make that recovery adaptation. And then without rest, there actually is no time for the body to make adaptations when we have stressed it to the point where it needs to adapt, right? So you have to have stress and rest in order to ultimately make the biggest recoveries. And the best tool to get the most effective rest, to get the most repairs into your body is sleep. Like, if you look at the studies, if you look at the science, if you look at the research, out of every single recovery tool that you can use on the planet, whether it's cold plunges, massage guns, anything of the such, your most effective tool is going to be sleep, by far. And so if you get to the point where you're increasing volume and you're actually decreasing sleep, that's actually going to over-index a little bit more on the stress category and less on the rest category. So you're actually going to probably detrain a little bit because you're putting too much stress in relative to your overall sleep. Now, when I say cut into sleep, listen, if you have to wake up super early one day to get in a long run and there's one night where you're getting less sleep than usual, that's totally okay. I mean consistently, right? So if you go from over a long period of time, that's the caveat. Remember principle number one, don't just go out there and rip. But let's just say, you know, you are training early on in your training plan and you're maybe training about 8.5 hours a week and you feel like that's like really comfortable, you're getting good sleep, like you're being consistent with it. And then weeks and weeks down the line, like you get to the point where you ramp up to, you know, 12, 13 hours a week. But like now, like in order to get in that 13 hours, like you have to wake up an hour earlier each day, like that's going to be detrimental. So that's the biggest thing is like, don't have it cut into sleep because you're actually going to do more of a disservice in that recovery realm as well, into the point where it's on that. And here's like a thing too, like, you know, if determining if now is a good time to race a 100 miler, 100K, 50 miler, or 50K, go back to that minimum and maximum principle. And if you can confidently, you know, take 3 weeks for a 50K or 50 mile to get in that 6 hours per week at least of running, and for 100K, 100 miler, if you can look at that six peak weeks, and ultimately say like, yeah, I can get at least 9 hours of training during this time frame, then this is a good time for you to train into it. And again, you want to make sure to ramp into it slowly. It's not something that you can just go from 0 to 9 hours off the bat. We'll talk about how to ramp that up. But that's also a good thing to determine, is now a good time in your life to train for an ultra marathon. And it doesn't always have to be yes. And it doesn't make you weak. It doesn't make you anything like that. We all just go through seasons in life, right? Maybe you just had a kid and you want to spend more time with your family. Maybe you're transitioning to a new job and you really want to go there and kill it, right? Maybe you are are, you know, starting some side projects and taking a little bit of a break from running. Like, you don't have to, like, always, like, you know, make your life go around the training if you want the training to go around life, right? So just know that, like, that's a good determinant in there as well. And then from there, you can determine your upper time frame of where it's going to be before it cuts into sleep. Also, too, the recovery thing, that goes hand in hand with sleep, but same kind of principle is, like, you don't want your training to go into the realms of, like, you know, cutting into recovery time as well. Now, I know I also mentioned cutting into stress levels. And what I specifically mean by stress levels, right? Now, of course, you're like, wait, stress levels, didn't you say stress and rest equals adaptation? Yes, like, physical stress, it's there. I'm talking about the mental stress. And, like, that's the point where two things can happen. Number one, you get really stressed out about the training, right? It's like the training is not fun anymore. It feels like you're just kind of going through the motions. Like, it feels like you're, you know, just kind of checking a box. Like, you're just not stoked about getting on that long run or, like, and listen, I'm not saying you have to be stoked every single time to get in a workout. Like, for sure. There are times where I wake up and the last thing I want to do is run. I will tell you, even this morning, as of this recording of this podcast, I had a 2-hour run this morning and I told myself, I was like, I do not want to run today, but I went out and did it. I'm talking about, like, if you're getting this feeling over, like, a week every single day, and it's a very prominent feeling, not just like the I don't feel like doing this, but more so like, man, I'm really not liking this, like, everything like that, that's a sign that maybe we're doing a little bit too much and we might need some recovery. Now, it doesn't mean we can't handle the volume. We could just take a temporary recovery period as well. But where the more long-term stress I see from adding in more volume is if that volume is cutting into other priorities in your life that you genuinely want to spend time with, right? So let's just say, like, a big priority for you is family, and all of a sudden it's cutting into family times. That can lead to increased stress levels because, you know, it could lead to not even just, like, external stress from your family being like, hey, like, why aren't you here or anything like that, but also internally, like, if you genuinely, like, want to spend time with them, that will weigh on you mentally. And, like, that's going to lead to increased stress. And when we actually have increased mental stress, that has the same impact on our body as physical stress. So just know that, like, you can actually over-index again on the stress rest, on the stress and the stress rest equation, let's say that 10 times fast, where you can almost do more harm than good, right? So all those things is, like, saying, like, you know, is it going to increase your stress levels? Is it going to make training less enjoyable? Like, do you not get excited about, like, these big weeks, which some people don't? Like, those are things to ask about for sure, right? And so those are things you really, really want to do when increasing volume. And you might get to a point where you can increase volume. And I always say, like, and I always like to ask athletes this anytime, like, we start to get into, like, the peak training, is saying, like, hey, like, how many hours realistically per week could you commit to running without it leaving into sleep, recovery, or stress levels? And that will determine, like, how much we go into our peak week, right? And at some point, every single athlete, even professional athletes, like, even, you know, people who are just starting, at some point, everybody will hit a ceiling in terms of how much they can train per week without it cutting into those three things. And that is totally okay. And I'll tell you what to do when you get to that scenario. But that's, I think, just knowing what your upper limit is going to help you to know, like, what you can handle on a week-to-week basis when you're increasing volume as well. So that's, like, a big principle as well. So then the last principle I'll say, when you're increasing high volume, the one thing to keep in mind is you never want to increase intensity and volume at the same time. And for intensity, to define what that is, so intensity is the effort level that you are running in a specific workout. So for most easy runs, and the way that I like to measure intensity is rate of perceived effort, or RPE. And RPE is the framework that I use with my clients. It's the framework that I use to train in my own training in terms of, like, how I would assign workout intensity. So I'll give you an example. Today was an easy run for me for 2 hours at 2 to 3 RPE, which means easy pace, like, throughout, like, easy intensity, and that's what it feels like. And it feels, when I say 2 to 3, it's on a scale of 10. So RPE is measured on a scale of 1 to 10, and then you would assign an intensity based on how intense that workout feels on that scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being ridiculously easy and 10 being the hardest fucking thing ever. So I don't even know why I put the F word in there, but hey, we got to make it a little spicy meatball. Anyways, we're getting a little off track here, but coming right back. So 2 to 3 RPE, whereas like if I'm doing like a tempo run, it would be, you know, warm up for 20 minutes at 2 to 3 RPE and then 20 minute tempo at 6 to 7 RPE and then cool down for 20 minutes at 2 to 3 RPE, right? So like intensity will be measured in the, at least in the scope of this podcast, by RPE. You can also measure intensity by heart rate. You can measure it by pace if that's what you're doing it on. I always suggest RPE is the optimal way to do so for ultra running for various reasons we won't discuss on this podcast. I actually did a podcast recently on why RPE is more optimal than heart rate training. You can give that a listen if you want to. But it's basically the more intense you go, you want to be sure not to increase volume at the same time. And the reason why that is because intensity, when you increase intensity, that actually has a higher load on the body. And when you increase volume, that also has a high load on the body. And so what happens is, like, if you increase volume and intensity at the same time, even if you're increasing your overall volume, right? So I'll give you an example. Let's just say we're running, 8 hours a week, right? Running 8 hours a week. The next week, let's just say, and this kind of gets into like the gradual build stuff, but let's just say like next week, we can handle about 10% more volume, which would mean we would go up to about 8 hours and 50 minutes the next week in terms of training. We can raise our overall volume, aka time on feet, running by 850, but now, like let's just say we also increase our intensity by adding in a tempo workout, whereas last week we just did easy runs. Not only are you increasing the volume on your body, but you're also now increasing the intensity, which is instead of just a 10% increase in terms of volume, the overall load on the body is going to be way higher than 10% because now you're looking at intensity as well. And there's actually a calculation that you can do to like measure this out, which is called trip score. This is getting very technical on here. You're like, Joe, what the fuck? This is so technical, but hey, I'm trying to help you. Like, we're gonna make it fucking fun along the way too. So we're making it happen. But basically, like, without getting too in the nitty-gritties, trip score basically takes your RPE and your given time at that given intensity, and you multiply the minutes spent running versus time multiplied by the RPE that you're spending at, and that's gonna give your overall trip score. So your volume week over week is only going up by 10%, but your trip score could theoretically go up by like 10, 20, 30%. And that trip score is really going to determine the more spike in training load. And again, without getting too far into the weeds of like injury and stuff like that, the reason why injury happens for the most part, and there's also other factors as well, but one of the biggest causes for injury in ultra running is a spike in trip score relative to you as well. Now, there's other factors that can go into it, lack of sleep, poor nutrition, not hydrating enough, muscular imbalances. Like, there's tons of other things as well. But if we're assuming all those are equal, and we're looking at like overall training, where you see people get injured a lot is that they just will increase trip score like massively, whether it's just on volume, whether it's increasing volume and intensity at the same time. Those are the things can really fuck people up in terms of just getting hurt. So what you'd want to do is, if you are going through an intense block, it doesn't mean that like each week you have to like take down your volume. How you would do it is you would basically do your if we're following a protocol where we're doing build and then recovery, which I'll talk about into the next section of this podcast, but generally like smart training will require you to build and then you have like a recovery week on there as well. Let's just say we're doing 3 weeks build, 1 week recovery. In that protocol, you would do in that first week, you would do your most intense workouts. And when I say most intense workouts, it means the workouts with your highest time at intensity. So you take your highest time at intensity in your given speed workouts, and that's what it's going to be. The next week after that, you're going to have it your second highest time and intensity in that 4-week block. And because we're taking down intensity, what can we bump up now? We can bump up volume now. So now we're building volume, but we're taking down intensity. And this is really important because we want to build the volume so that we can continue to that high volume trend of increasing our volume overall. So never increase intensity and volume at the same time. If you're going to do it in that method. And that's going to help you to really, really increase your volume. And as you get closer to the race, you want to prioritize more volume over intensity. In terms of specific ultra runnings, for marathons and shorter distances, this is very, very different. But for ultra marathons, you want to focus way more on volume than intensity as you get closer to the race, because you want to build up that volume as much as possible. So those are the principles in terms of like really doing high volume in a safe way. Number one, don't go out there and rip, build into it safely. Two, analyze your base, analyze like what you can do in terms of like how you can increase volume. Three, don't let it cut into sleep, recovery, or stress levels, aka the other priorities in your life. And then four, never increase intensity and volume at the same time. So now that we cover the principles, now we'll talk about how to actually build your training into high volume over time so you can have a high volume running plan. Hey everybody, I just want to take a quick break in this episode to talk about two game-changing products that I've used in my training that have helped to level up my performance, help me recover better, and ultimately help me be better in my ultra running on a day-to-day basis. The first has to do with muscle soreness and recovery. I used to have terrible muscle soreness. I used to really, really have my legs beaten up. And then I came across this product called Play On Relief, which is a pain relief spray, all natural, that you can spray on your muscles and it goes to work in seconds in terms of relieving your muscles. I use this in the middle of a long run. I use this post long run. I use this during races, and it helps me to not only in the moment feel like I can keep going without having sore legs, but it also allows me to recover the next day for my next workout so I don't have to delay training at all. And this product is amazing. It's incredible. It's one of my favorites for sure. And the best part is you don't have to like rub it in. There's no creams, no messes. It's just a simple spray. It goes right to work in your muscles, and it's way more effective and safer than ibuprofen, Icy Hot, BioFreeze, any of these other pain relief products. So you got to try it out. It's Play On Relief. If you go to the link in the show notes or go to playonrelief.com, use code EverydayUltra at checkout, you can get 20% off your order of Play On Relief. Totally recommend this product. It is incredible, and it will help you save your muscles to not only perform better, but recover better in your ultra marathon training. So that's the first company. The second company that has just been amazing is this clothing company that makes the most comfortable clothing, clothing that lasts, and ultimately clothing that looks pretty damn good. That's the most important thing out there, right? But in all seriousness, I used to get so frustrated because I would buy running clothing and then it would rip, it would wear away, it just wouldn't last long enough. And I would just get frustrated because I would keep buying clothes. But Jonji is the company that I've been working with, and they have a 5-year guarantee with their clothing because they're very, very confident that their clothing is going to last for a very, very long time. And they make a wide array of dry fit shirts, shorts, pants, tights, everything for both winter, summer, and spring months that are going to help you really feel good and look good on the trail as well. My favorite products are the Trail Tight, which is actually a pair of tights that you can use that has over 7 pockets on the actual tight as well. So like you don't even have to have like a running belt or anything like that. You can put your phone, you can put a soft flask in there. They're super comfortable and super versatile. So I love the Trail Tight, and I also love the All Day Running Tee as well. It keeps me cool in the hot months, and it also can really be breathable if you're wearing a lot of layers in the cold months as well. So those are some of my favorite products at all. And if you want to try out Jonji, you can get 10% off your order by going to jonji.com. Which is JANJI.com. Use code EverydayUltra at checkout to get 10% off your order. That's JANJI.com. Use code EverydayUltra at checkout to get 10% off your orders so you can look good, feel good, and rock it on the trails. All right, everybody, that's enough of that. Let's get right back into the episode. All right, so here's how you can make sure to maximize your volume in your training, assuming that you're doing everything that I mentioned before. The first thing really comes into even when you are looking at races to plan, and this is one of the biggest principles when it comes to success for an ultra marathon athlete. The first thing, there's really two big things. When someone asks me like, hey, like what does it really take to be successful as an ultra runner? And I say there's really two things that kind of come into realm when it comes to specific training. The first thing is consistency. If you can be consistent with your training, if you can like show up, you know, day after day, whatever that means for you and your schedule on a consistent basis, that is going to be a big predictor of success. The second thing is giving yourself a bigger time frame. So what I mean by that is the longer time frame that you have to train for a given race, the higher your chance of success. Now, obviously that seems so apparent, right? It's just like, of course, yeah, the more time I have to prepare for anything, the better I'm going to be prepared for the race, Joe. Like, thanks for the mind-blowing tip. But here's why that's so important. And it has to do with volume in and itself, and also speed too, but mostly volume, because if you have a longer time frame, you have more of a leeway to ramp up your volume in a way where you can really get the maximum amount of time training that you can get, right? Because if you are going for a 100 miler that is 12 weeks away, and let's just say you have a base currently, you're not going to have as big of a base ramping up safely than you would if you were to give yourself 24 weeks to train for that same exact ultra marathon. Plus, on top of that as well, this goes out of the scope of this conversation, but like, if you give yourself a long enough time frame, you can also do more targeted speed blocks like VO2 max work and lactate threshold work, which are both fancy ways for given types of speed focuses that we can do, right? But from a volume perspective, you can get more volume safely if you have a longer time frame as well. So just know that a longer time frame is going to be beneficial as well. So when you're thinking about, you know, planning for a race or when to start to train for a race or anything like that, the longer the time frame, the better, because that's going to give you a bigger base for you to build on no matter where you're at currently into a higher volume frame. Now, if you currently already have a pretty high volume base, you know, relative to the minimum maximum principle, like, you're good. And like, if you want to like train into a race that's like 10 weeks away and like you want to build in that high volume, you likely can do so very, very safely as well. But for the most part, if you're just kind of getting back into it off of a smaller kind of base, so to say, it's better to give yourself a longer time frame for sure. Now, the second thing is the week-to-week basis, like how much are you increasing your volume? So I think first and foremost, we're going to scrap intensity off the side for the sake of this conversation, and we're just going to talk about volume. And so when I mean by volume, let's just assume that intensity is staying the same, which if you're getting closer to a race, generally it's going to be in the easy intensity place. So right now we're just assuming that intensity is going to be the same and we can increase volume with keeping intensity the same. And by the way, if you are putting intensity into the mix, that's where you would use that TRIMP score that I mentioned before. TRIMP score, by the way, that's spelled T-R-I-M-P, TRIMP score. That's where you would kind of calculate your load. But if you are just keeping volume or intensity stable week after week, generally the function of your TRIMP score is going to just be the minutes, because intensity is going to stay the same, right? So we're just going to assume that for just simplicity of this conversation. So a lot of the times when people think about increasing weekly volume, the classic rule that's thrown around is 10%. We've heard it, probably heard it all before. And if you haven't heard it before, there's a very, very cliched notion in the ultra running, or I shouldn't say ultra running, but just in the running world, that 10% increases are going to be the go-to standard for increasing on a week-to-week basis. Now, I do think that is accurate to a relative amount of percentage for the most part of what you can increase, but it should not be used as the rule. And here's why. The biggest thing, it shouldn't be used as the rule for a few different reasons. Number one, especially when you're getting into the very high volume weeks, think about like increasing 10% off of very high volume weeks. You're increasing hours by a ton, right? Like if you go by 10% off of like a 13-hour week, right? Like then, you know, you're adding, and we'll pull up the calculator because your boy is not good at mental math. I suck at mental math. But 10% of 13 hours is about an hour and a half, which, you know, isn't too crazy, but let's just say maybe you're training 15 hours a week. Now, if you're training 15 hours a week, 10% of that is, if we're going to go by one here, it's going to be 1.5 hours. So as you can see, like the proportion is going to get bigger and bigger in terms of the increases that you can do per week. And you could almost overshoot how much volume that you're kind of doing in terms of the load on your body. So like the longer you go, like 10% might be actually a little bit aggressive into that as well. Now, conversely, 10% could be too little. And where I mean by that is where you are, if you're just starting off a smaller base, right? Let's just say maybe you're starting at like 1 hour or 2 hours a week. Like 10% of 2 hours is, like, again, I mean, I should know that. It's probably, what, 0.2? I think it's like, yeah, it's 0.2. Come on, Joe. You didn't need the calculator for that. Let's be smart here. But 0.2. So 0.2 in equated to time is going to be like about, you know, what is that, 20 minutes itch, like 20, 30 minutes. And if you're increasing like that much week after week, that's going to be pretty conservative. So, and if you have a pretty big base beforehand, you can probably do a little bit more on there as well. So generally, I say, for the most part, when I'm programming athletes' workouts, depending on all those factors that I mentioned earlier in the podcast, your base, your injury history, your availability, stress levels, all that kind of stuff as well, you can expect to safely increase your volume anywhere between 5 to 15% per week. Now, that's a very, very big kind of frame as well. I would say you're going to probably edge more into the 10 to 15% if you're going off of a lower base, assuming that your history has been a little bit bigger, if the training feels too easy, all those kind of things as well. And you're probably going to move to like the 5 to 10% little slower stuff the larger you get into the training as well, to kind of not risk some things as well. Now, the thing is, people are very different with how they can handle, volume increases, so to say. And this is something that you intuitively can learn over time and just by seeing signals in your body and stuff. Even for me, like when I'm working with clients, like I always ask them the question, is the training too easy, or is it too hard, or is it just right? Is it in that Goldilocks zone? If they're saying that it's in the Goldilocks zone and we're currently on a rate of volume increase that is helping them be in that Goldilocks zone, then we know we're in the right place as well. But if it feels like it's too hard, you're probably increasing way too much and you might need to taper down the increases a little bit. But if it feels ridiculously easy, you might need to increase it as well. I usually will never increase an athlete's load by more than 15%. Like 15% would be the very, very high end of what I like to do, because I could do a little bit more than 15%. But what I usually like to say is being conservative is always going to be way better than being aggressive, especially with volume increases. And the reason why I say that is because it is way easier to overcorrect if training's too easy than if it's too hard. Because an overcorrection on things that are too hard generally means you're getting injured and you have to take time off running. Whereas, like, if it is too easy, all you got to do, increase the volume, right? So 5 to 15% based on your prior factors, and then also based on your experience of whether or not the training feels. So I always say, do it like the Goldilocks test, right? Is the training too easy? Is it too hard? Or is it just right? If it's just right, you're on a way where you can increase those things a lot more as well. So just know that, you know, 5 to 15% based on all those factors is where you're going to go on there as well, with the bigger percentages being on a lower base, assuming that you have a big base in the past, and then also too on there as well. Now, just also saying too, if you have injury history, anything like that, like an injury history with a lot higher volume and things like that, your percentage is going to decrease too as well. So let's just say when you're increasing high volume, you have a history with your IT band flaring up. Instead of it, you know, increasing 8% per week, 9% per week, you might be increasing more like 5% per week, just to be mindful of that. And you're increasing strength training as well during that time frame to also do that as well too. So that's also like a big thing, is like if you have high volume weeks and you can fit in some strength training to help with any weaknesses that inherently have historically popped up with high volume, that is a good way to do so as well. And I would also consider that into how much volume you're putting in, because you want to still have that strength training to make sure your muscles are still in check too. So just know that there's that time frame as well. And even so, if you're just starting running and you don't have a base before, like that, even if you are running 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever a week, like you're still probably going to want to take it a little bit more conservative in the 5 to 10% range, because you don't have a big enough base. And like, we need to really be sure to ease it into there as well. Whereas like if you have a history of running like, you know, 13, 14, 15 hour weeks. And like, I'll give you an example. Like I took a break off running for about a month after Javelina, but going into Javelina, I was doing 13, 14 hour weeks. Like I was able to like ramp my training up a lot quicker, you know, close to that 15% range per week. Whereas like, if I had never been running before, I would definitely be closer to that 5 to 10% a week. So again, as you can all see, this is a very multifactorial thing, and we don't want to just say 10%, because 10% could be too much or it can be too little in terms of the volume build as well. Now, the other thing to also do in here too is it is usually not ideal to have a straight continuous build over the entire training program. And what I mean by that is every single, you don't want to have, let's just say we have 8 weeks to train for a race. I'm just giving numbers for numbers' sake here. You don't want to have week one build, week two build, week three build, week four build, week five build, week six build, week seven build, week eight build. You want to have some recovery weeks in there as well. Because again, we need stress and we need rest. And having recovery weeks where basically you're taking down volume a slight tad from your prior peak week in a way to have your body just reset a little bit. So this is something that I incorporate with athletes a lot. So let's just say, you know, and again, I'm using the 10% for round number sake and just for example sake here. But if I'm looking at an athlete, right, and they're going through like a build, and they'll have week one would be a build, week two would be 10% higher, week three would be 10% higher than the prior week, then week four, assuming like if they're saying like, hey, like I'm feeling a little bit more burnt or like tired or things like that, then we will put in a recovery week where we're going to take down the volume a little bit. So let's just say they were doing 9 hours that week, that recovery week, I might give them 7:30. And that magnitude of how big the recovery week is going to be a factor of how diminished any performance and workouts are going to be. Because no matter what, like as you're building, like it, workouts might feel harder. They might have a little bit more things on there as well. If they are being pretty close to linear, then that's going to be less time. If it's going to be a bigger gap in terms of just like maybe feeling a little slower, I might take the recovery a little bit more, but I wouldn't slash it too much. So like that's also the big thing as well you want to keep into there. So that would incorporate like how big you want that recovery week to be in there as well. Now the timing of the recovery week, there's another standard notion out there that's every 3 weeks. On the fourth week, you are going to have a recovery week. That is also not a great rule to have because sometimes you might throw in more frequent recovery weeks. And this is especially true if you are going through a high intensity phase. And you might even have more build weeks and less recovery weeks in a low intensity, higher volume kind of training thing because it's not going to be as stressful on the body as well. Again, once your athlete gets to the point where they're feeling like there's a lot of load on the legs or they feel like they're, just kind of needing a little bit of a deload week. They're kind of feeling the motions of the training. And like, these are things that like I always look at with athletes. And by the way, when I'm saying athletes, I'm also saying you, like what you would do is like, look at your own life and saying like, hey, am I getting burnt out with the training? Am I getting, am I feeling just heavy? Am I feeling a little tight? Like, am I feeling just a little meh, like just not great in my training? That's probably a sign for a deload week. And generally, for the most part, it is around 2 to 3 weeks after a build. That's when you want to start to assess that. If after 3 weeks you think the training is still feeling pretty easy, then keep building on from there. I always like to say 6 weeks is my maximum for build because I found that usually for the most part, even after 6 weeks, if an athlete is feeling good, there is some benefit in giving them that rest week as well. So for you, like I would say 6 weeks will be your high end as well, but just check in after that second or third week of building if you might need a recovery week if you're putting that in your training. So don't just do a straight linear build, do a like recovery phases in there, but when you're getting back on the build week, you want to build your volume relative to that prior peak week before the recovery. So if you had 10 hours the week before recovery, let's just say you did the recovery week and it was 8 hours and 30 minutes, you would increase your base from that 10 hours as opposed to the 8:30. So you can continue on that line as well. So like if you're thinking about like a Strava graph, right, you're going up, 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 a little bit of dip, up, 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 a little bit of dip. Whereas over the long term, you're on the upward trajectory from there. Now, speaking of the upward trajectory, the next natural question that you probably have is, well, how much should I be building to, right? Like if I do have like a lot of time and I can put in a lot of volume, how much can I build to? Is there a point where too much is too much, right? Where I'm putting myself in a hole. I always say like you can build to what you want to build at the point where, you know, sleep, recovery, and stress levels don't get diminished. And so, and the reason why I say that is a lot of people like will be like, well, you know, what I train just as much for like a 50K than I would a 50 miler. Like what's really interesting when you look at the volume of athletes who are training for 5Ks, 10Ks, even marathons, they're sometimes putting up like high volume, like 80 to 100 miles. I'm talking just miles just because it's more, applicable in the road world. But, you know, they're running like 80 to 100 miles per week for a much shorter race. Whereas most even ultra athletes like won't even get to 100 miles in a week for a 50 miler or 100K or 100 miler. And again, like I think it's more of a function of like they're just having so much more time to put in before they hit that apex of sleep recovery and stress levels. So they can, and because they can, they're able to put that in and ultimately work towards their major goal of the 5K, 10K marathon. So the high volume principle does work across all different distances for sure. Now, and then that same principle goes into, you know, when it doesn't cut into sleep recovery or stress levels, that's going to be your highest point, assuming that you are building up in the safe way as well. But the one thing that I would just generally kind of look at is like your long runs and like as you're kind of building up into this, because like, you know, when you're racing, this is more so applicable to like a 50K or a 50 miler, like you want to be too wary that you're not getting too close to that actual distance that you're doing in your long runs. So if you're doing like a 50K long run, or I should say if you're training for a 50K race, like you're likely not going to do 50K is a long run beforehand, just because like the risk reward is a little too high with that as well. With a 50 miler, like you can do a 50K, but you know, it might be tough to do like a 40 miler. And obviously as you get to like 100 mile and 200 mile, like the chance to do even training runs that are more than half the distance of those kind of races are a little bit different. So the longer it gets, the less this applies, but I generally don't like to get too incredibly close in terms of like my long run volume to the specific race itself. So that way you get more time to recover. And I guess this goes to the natural next question of like, how long should my longest run be? This is a very multifactorial answer because there's so many things that really depend on like where to go for a long run. And I actually did a whole podcast on long runs called Long Run Tips, I believe, where I go through this. But in essence, it depends on like what your goals are. Like if your goal is to like build, like durability, then yes, like the longest goal, like you want to be able to, or the longest run possible, like you want to get that in there if you can, given you have like the ramp ups for sure. If you want to test nutrition, you should definitely be doing a long run over 4 to 6 hours, no matter what the distance is, generally like over 4 hours. And then obviously the more long the race is that you're training for, the longer that would be. However, if you're confident on nutrition, if you're confident on the durability perspective, if you're confident on all that, there actually is some values instead of just doing, you know, one singular huge long run, which by the way, like, you know, that can have a little bit of risk reward in terms of like how much you are putting on. And I'll explain that in a second why that is. But instead of doing like a singular long run, you can do like back to back or back to back to back long runs as well. And what that does is it splits the volume over 3 days and it gives you that ability to have that recovery between each session, because the longer duration you go in a given run, it's going to take a little bit more time to recover. Whereas if you are, let's just say we're looking at, you know, 8 hours, right? So doing an 8 hour long run is going to be much more taxing on the body than doing back to back 4 hours, because you have that sleep in between and you're breaking it up as well. And so I would really just like more so look at like, again, the hours you can safely build into, and then ultimately looking at the how the volume is distributed. That's the eloquent way of saying it, not condensation. What is this, fucking weather? But you want to look at how the volume is distributed over the week, and then that's where it's really going to inform, like, you know, how you can structure things as well, which actually goes into the next point, is like, if you're tapped out on hours for a given week, that's where condensing volume can really, really help. Like it's going to be super, super beneficial. So let's just say, you know, you've looked at your schedule and you see you can safely build up to 13 hours a week, assuming that everything goes well, right? 13 hours in a week. But that's like your cap, because once you do 13 hours, you're going to have to wake up a little earlier. You know, you can't go to sleep like as earlier, like you're going to cut into sleep recovery and stress levels, and you've determined that as well. So if that is that 13 hour limit, and let's just say you're hitting that 4 weeks before your race, like 4 weeks before your race, instead of just, you know, saying, well, then you've hit your limit and we're just going to continue to kind of go on, we still want to introduce stimulus that is going to help you to ultimately still make adaptations leading into the race. So what you would do is you would condense your volume. You would condense your volume by making your longer days longer and your easy days easier. And the reason why you want to do this is, as I mentioned before, if you're looking at, let's just say, 8 hours of training, doing 8 hours on a singular long run is going to be way more taxing on the body than back-to-back 4 hours. So If we take that same concept and we look at our volume that we're going to be training for the week, we would distribute it in a way that's going to maximize the adaptations a little bit more with the same deck of cards that we're going to have, right? So let's just say, let's pull up a Google spreadsheet and just let's do it live. Fuck it. We'll do it live. Does anyone see that video? That video is like one of my favorite videos of all time. If you haven't seen it, like go search, fuck it. We'll do it live on YouTube. It is hysterical. So I'm right now on my handy dandy spreadsheet that you can not see because this is audio format. I'm right now putting out like a 13 hour week. So, let's just say we're doing 6 hours on Saturday, 2 hours on Sunday. And again, we're assuming that that intensity is going to be the same here. Let's say 2, 2, 2, 2. So, let's see. Oh, that was way too much. Let's see. Okay. So So I'm just making this up for just numbers sake here. Like there is like no, like don't structure your weeks on this is what I'm saying. This is literally just for math sake. So let's just say you have a schedule in the week and you're tapped out at 13 hours. And that consists of a 1 hour run Tuesday, 1 hour run Tuesday. Why am I starting with Tuesday? 1 hour run Monday, 1 hour run Tuesday, 1 hour run Wednesday, 1.5 hour run Thursday, 30 minutes Friday, 6 hours Saturday, and 2 hours Sunday. Let's just say you have that schedule. Now, what we would do is like, let's just say you're tapped out on this as well. The first question you want to ask is there a day with more availability than others for sure? And that's a big question to ask yourself as you're going through the distribution in any type, whether you're condensing volume or setting a schedule, is looking when you can get in your longer runs and when it's going to be best for shorter runs. So let's just say in this scenario, you're like, hey, like I have work Monday through Friday, Saturdays and Sundays are really good times for me, but Saturdays are usually better because Saturdays are kind of like my day and then Sunday I spend time with the kids. Great. Awesome. So are there any days during the week that are exceptionally busy for you? And, you know, you would look at that and be like, well, yeah, gee, like, you know, Tuesdays are usually slammed with meetings, a little stressful day at work. And then, you know, sometimes like even Wednesday can get a little tough as well. Great. Awesome. So what we're going to do is you're going to take away from Tuesday. Let's just take 30 minutes away from Tuesday and then 30 minutes away from Wednesday. And we take that extra hour. And now we're going to put it on our Saturday long run, which is our day that we have the most stuff as well. So now we still have a 13 hour schedule. However, we have shorter runs on Tuesday and Wednesday. And now we have a longer run on Saturday, which is going to introduce better stimulus on that way. Now you want to be sure not to jack up your long run too quickly. I would say for the most part, you know, really being keen, go cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs and just jack up your long run right off the bat. Like we also, just like our regular training plan and our cumulative weekly volume, we want to be able to also increase the duration of our long run in a way that's going to be safe as well. So generally for me, depending on where the athlete's at and anything, I will increase the long run anywhere between 30 minutes to an hour. And usually it'll be more on the higher end, like if the person has more experience with higher volume in general, and also to like depending on where they're at in the training plan and what their intensity is during the week. Now, you can be a little bit more aggressive with that if you kind of do like a mini taper into like a very long run. So let's just say, you know, you are like, you're basically treating it like a race, right? Because like, if you think about like your longest run and likely a race, the difference between the time in terms of hours is probably going to be pretty big. So if you are planning to jump up your long run, whether it's doing like a race simulation or whether it's doing anything like that, I always suggest at the very least doing some sort of a mini taper where Monday through Friday, you are inherently giving a lot of lot less volume, a lot more recovery in those areas as well, even 2 weeks before, if you can in the training block as well. And almost treat it like you are going into it fresh, like a race. So you're not like going into that increased volume long run on very, very tired legs. And that's just going to help with that as well. But anyways, we're getting kind of into a rabbit hole here in the long run. But all that being said, as that example I mentioned before, now we have condensed, we're bumping around. Don't worry. Stay with me, people. We're here. Like my ADHD brain is just firing on all cylinders. But anywho, on this specific example that I mentioned before, 13 hours, we have 13 hours week after week, but now we're going to get a greater stimulus because we have more condensed volume on that Saturday and less volume during the week itself. And even that less volume during the week is actually going to be recovery time, right? And notice how like the way that we kind of structured that too is we have like a pretty heavy weekend, 7-2, and then we kind of go into a lighter earlier part of the week where we're getting some more of that recovery as well. So That is one thing that you can do if you are kind of tapped out on hours, but still simulate a quote-unquote high-volume kind of strategy in there as well. Now, the other thing too is, like I mentioned before, the big kind of principle is just making sure to look at your most important workouts and scheduling them on the days that you can hit them. That's going to allow you to build volume as much as possible too. So like just knowing like what days you're most available, what days are most stressful, what days you know are just going to be really tough to get in a workout, what days are going to be like, yeah, no brainer, we're going to get that in, and scheduling your longest runs and your most important workouts on those days that are going to be the best thing as well. So just making sure like on a week to week basis to do that, because if you start to miss key workouts, if you start to miss, you know, some volume week after week, that's going to come at detriment to building on as well. So just know that like, you know, you want to be as consistent as possible just so you can have your body be able to handle the volume increases as you're building up for sure as well. Last two points about the building into high volume training. The big thing that you need to do is you need to make sure you are eating and hydrating well throughout high volume training. This is so, so important. So if you are doing high volume, you are burning a shit ton of calories, like a ton of calories. And when I say eating and hydrating, I don't just mean on the run. That's a whole nother podcast topic in terms of nutrition, but I also mean outside of the run as well. When you're doing the post run recovery meal, when you're eating throughout the day, making sure like you're eating really well. It is really important to refuel your body in these things so you can be able to go into that high volume period as performing as best as you can, but also too by making sure that you are preventing injury itself. So what happens is when you're increasing volume, if you increase volume at a point where you're not nourishing your body as much, you actually can give yourself a risk of stress fractures. And stress fractures are basically like small little fractures on your bones. Usually for runners, they'll show anywhere in like the feet, maybe even the tibia, the hips, sacrum area. And these are things that if they happen, you can't run through them. Like you are done. Like you can't run a stress fracture. It is like a hard no on that, just because you need to relieve yourself of the pressure from doing that. And one of the biggest causes of doing that in a high volume period is not eating enough. So I always say at the very least, making sure you're eating at a caloric balance when you're going into the high volume periods. And that's not only going to help to prevent injury, but you're going to feel a lot better. You're going to perform a lot better. And I might get a lot of flack for this, but like, you know, it actually will be much more beneficial to your endurance performance if you're going into your workouts after eating something as opposed to doing something fasted. Sure, there is the, you know, the theory out there that says like when you do things fasted, you kick on the fat burning metabolism of your body. Yes, 100%. And there is some studies that do suggest that that might be true. However, like it does increase that fat metabolism thing, but the risk reward in terms of, especially when you're going through a high volume period, the risk reward that you can get from potentially getting injured on that, I don't think is worth the fat burning adaptation that you're going to get from that experience. Because here's the reality, even if you're just running slow, even on a full belly, you are going to increase your body's fat burning metabolism. And you're also going to really, really have a bigger aerobic base too, because you're going to be performing to your best ability in that specific workout as well. So if you want to do it fasted, that's totally fine. I would highly suggest just trying to do a lot of runs, especially in the high volume period with a full belly, generally like eating, you know, at least somewhere an hour before the race it's going to feel like a race with all the volume, at least an hour before the run that you're doing. And obviously making sure you are hydrating well, like you are drinking enough water throughout the day, you're getting in some sodium, because hydrating is actually a big way to keep your muscles fresh, because it lubricates the fascia in all your muscles, and that'll help you to move a lot better. It'll help you to not feel as tight. It'll help your muscles to move a lot more fluid. Like think of yourself like the Tin Man and the Wizard of Oz, where like if you go out on your long run, you're all stiff, all you need is a little bit of oil, aka water, and make sure to oil up those joints and feeling like you can go smoothly out there, right? And you can be like the Tin Man. I don't know, weird analogy, but that kind of, that's always just one thing I say, is just make sure you're eating and hydrating well through your high volume training too. Lastly too, if you're prone to injuries with high volume, that doesn't mean that you can't ramp up to high volume. I just say you have to make sure that you are getting in some strength work to take care of those areas as you are ramping up into high volume. So let's just say you have an injury with Achilles tendonitis, or you have an history with IT band syndrome, whatever like a thing is, and those usually happen when you ramp up into higher volume periods. I would say at least once or two times a week, and you don't have to do like super heavy weights, but making sure that you're doing some accessory work onto your body where you're really, really going through and taking care of the muscles that are supporting the Achilles and the muscles that are supporting the IT band to help you to be on there as well, because that's going to help to make your body much more resilient. Because how injury happens, it's a balance between two different things. It's a balance between load and it's a balance between capacity. And this is going to get really, well, I won't get too deep on the podcast, but for explanation case, load is obviously the load that you're putting on your body, whether it's volume, whether it's intensity, anything like that. And capacity is your body's ability to handle load. Now, if your body has too much load relative to the capacity that it's handling, especially your muscles, that's where injury is going to start to happen because you are now putting too much load relative to its capacity. And the best way to increase capacity is to strength train. That's why you strength train. You strength train because when your muscles are stronger, it can take on more capacity. So as you are building the load, you are also increasing your capacity along the way. And that's what I would suggest to do if you do have injury history with high volume periods. I'll even give you an example. For me, I haven't had it in 3 years, so that's been good. But when I first started running and I first started to increase my volume a lot, I was having IT band issues. Like my IT band would always flare up. It would be painful. It sucked. If you ever had IT band syndrome, it blows. So anytime I do increase volume, which right now I'm in a very high volume phase when it comes to my training for Cocodona, I'm making sure to do IT band exercises at least once a week, sometimes two times a week, and making sure that those muscles are intact so I don't get wrecked. And so far for 3 years, I've been doing that and it's been great for sure. So those are some tips on how you can build into high volume training and make sure to do it as well. And then lastly, just from like a distribution thing, like we kind of talked about condensing, but just kind of go into distribution in terms of like how you're distributing the runs over the week. Again, it really comes down to, you know, number one, your goals. And then number two, how much availability you have during the week. And it really looks at like looking at your schedule, seeing what days are most available. Those are the days that are generally going to be the longer runs. What are the days that are usually more stressful or least available? Those are going to be easy day for your shorter runs. And every other day you can kind of like mix it in as well. And then I always say like the more condensed your schedule, the more taxing it's going to be on your body. So like if you are having, you know, a 10-hour week schedule and you just peanut butter it over the course of 5 or 6 days or whatever you're running, that's going to be way less taxing on the body than if you were to have a longer run in there with shorter runs in between. I always suggest the traditional kind of long run model where you're doing, you know, more speed workouts if you're in that phase and shorter runs during the week, or at least, you know, whatever training period works best for you for like most of your runs during the week, having a generally a long run and then having either like a medium run or either another long run or just having at least one other bigger run-ish during the week as well too. And that can, you know, that's based off of a, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 day run schedule and then putting it on that as well. So that's generally what I like to see just because that long run is really important to build the physiological durability and the adaptations to be able to have your body to know how to go for longer periods of time in a consecutive time frame as opposed to, you know, simply just looking at like a peanut butter or the volume as well. And I think the last tip that I'll say is like plan all of this out in advance. And here's the reality too. Like when you plan something, it's not always going to go to plan. Like plans don't always go to plan because things happen, right? You might get sick. You might have a busy time at work. You might have to take extra care of the kids. Life might just get nuts, whatever those things are. But just making sure that at least when you first start, you have a general idea of how you're going to build up your volume over the course of your training period, just so you know what you're kind of working for, right? And I always say like, it's really, really good to just look at the volume and just say like, okay, like where's going to be like my peak week? How am I going to distribute this and everything like this? But then also having a gut check and like changing it all along the time. Like for me, like I think the best way is to have to train for any race is to have a dynamic training plan, one that moves around with your schedule, your progress, your recovery, all that kind of stuff. Static training plans are great because they give you a roadmap. However, like if you are feeling sick one weekend or you have to move around your schedule, they can be a little bit confusing as well. So I always say, like, having that plan ahead can make sure that you're on track and just being dynamic and flexible along the way for sure. And then, by the way, too, like, you know, that's what I do as a coach for athletes. Like, I build the dynamic plan based on, you know, the person's history, their goals, like their injury history, what they can handle in terms of load and capacity and all this kind of stuff as well into their schedule. And we modify it based on their progress or availability or if they're missing things like throughout the week. That's what I do for athletes as well. And then we give them into that volume phase where they're really, really getting that high volume, but at the same time, not where it's cutting into sleep recovery or stress levels. So if you are interested in that, right now we're currently all full in terms of rosters, but we actually are opening up some spots soon. We are opening up some spots soon. And because you listen to this whole podcast, I'm letting you know that early before we make the announcement. And so if you are interested in getting on the spot, a spot for Everyday Ultra Coaching, feel free to send me an email at everydayultrapodcast.com and mention that you'd like to be on the wait list. And once we open up those spots, we will let you know. But regardless, this is something that, you know, you can implement in your training or anything like that, you know, if you're wondering in terms of like high volume or something. But I always suggest working with a coach so you don't have to think about it as much. But that's why I do this podcast. I want to give you the tools, the skill sets, the abilities to be able to be a better ultra runner. And that's why I did this episode here as well. So hopefully this episode gives you a good framework on how to build safely into a high volume period. Now, sometimes, you know, I'm working with, you know, specific athletes and they say like, well, why am I not running as much volume as this person, but we're training for the same race? And again, the reason why is because it all takes into account your specific background. Like you might not have the base to do it, and that's not a bad thing. And it's not like a belittling thing. It's just the reality of where you're at when you're training. And just to kind of wrap up this up with an example, like when I first started training for Cocodona, I was coming off a very low volume period and a very, very stressful period in my life. Like my father had passed away unexpectedly out of the blue. And then I had just launched this coaching business too. So I was kind of getting that. And I was also working a full-time job. I was also planning for a wedding. There was just a lot going on. So there was very little time for me to increase volume in a way that was safely without it cutting into stress, sleep, like all that kind of stuff as well. So at this time, like, you know, early on, this was like, you know, January, December timeframe, I was only doing like 54 miles, or I shouldn't even go on miles, I'll go on hours here. I was really only doing 8 hours a week, 8:41. There was, you know, 1 week where I did 10 hours a week, where other people training for Cocodona, they were doing like 15, 16, 17. And at the time people were like, wow, you're doing like pretty low volume. And I said, well, hey, like if I started to jack up my volume, like really significantly, that would not be a great thing to do because I'm going to like injure myself. But as you can see, so, and I'm pulling up my training exactly. So 8 hours and 41 minutes. Then the next week was 5 hours and 6 minutes, but that was because of my wedding and honeymoon. And I took a week off of running, which by the way, if you take a week off of running, you can generally resume, where you were at previously in training. If you get to 2 weeks, you have to modify. That's a whole other schedule or a whole other episode in terms of flexibility, but just want to make that clear because after the 8 hours and 41, then I went to, you know, about 9-ish hours the next week. And then after that went to around 10 hours and then 11 hours and then 13 hours. So as you can see, like I'm starting to follow that like principle of like, you know, the 5 to 15% onto here. And so I made the gradual build, but now I was at the point where I was starting to hit that training that a lot of other people were doing at Cocodona. And listen, like you gotta like avoid like the FOMO as much as possible, because in the end of the day, I think that can be a big reason why people get injured is they see other people like putting in these massive amounts of volume and they're not there yet. And they're like, what am I doing with my training? I need to go out and run like 1 million miles. And they go out and run 1 million miles and then boom, all of a sudden blown Achilles, tight calf, like whatever that might be, right? So just please, like always meet yourself where you're at and there's nothing wrong with it. And let me tell you, it's going to be way better to, you know, maybe do like, listen, high volume is king, but safe volume is the best. God, I feel like I'm just like talking about like a safe sex ad here, but you want to be able to practice volume in a way that's safe. Again, that was just another, that seemed like another innuendo thing. I promise I'm not doing this on purpose, but, When you build your volume safely, that's going to give you the best results possible, regardless of where you're at. And as long as you're in the minimum maximum principle, and as long as you're building up safely, you are going to be good to go for your race as well. And listen, if you can move up and get that high volume training in, amazing. That's awesome. That's going to help you so, so much. But just be sure to do it in a way that builds slowly, in a way that's safe, in a way that's not going to be cutting into your recovery time. And ultimately, you're going to be ready to rip on your next ultra marathon. So, hope that episode was helpful. As you can see, I'm doing a lot of episodes like this as well, where I'm just talking about a topic that I think is really, really useful for ultra runners. So if you specifically want a topic that you want me to cover, please let me know. I would love, you can send me an email at everydayultrapodcast@gmail.com. Also send me a DM on Instagrams. I'm still fishing through some weeks of worth of DMs. I got tons of DMs that I'm behind on, but I will eventually see it, I promise. And if you message me and I haven't gotten back to you, I'm not ignoring you. I will get back to you, I promise. It's just been wild getting through all those DMs. Regardless, if you've listened this far, I appreciate you a ton. You are amazing. And just know that I'm grateful for you listening to this show. And because you're doing this and taking the time to invest into your ultra running experience, I know that you'll be accomplishing your next big ultra goal, whatever that might be for you, whether it's your first ultra, your fifth ultra, your first 100 miler, whatever that the goal is, I know you are on the right path, my friend. And I'm excited to continue to be with you on your journey towards that goal. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. I appreciate you. Get out there and crush those runs. And remember, my friends, be a better ultra runner every single day. And we'll see you in the next episode. Take care.